This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Now, I spoke with a financial analyst yesterday, and he estimated that Nigeria has been losing $1.5 billion as a result of the postponement.
That's VOA staffer Peter Cloti on the costs of postponing Nigeria's elections by a week. Details next. Also, there are fears that the postponement of Nigeria's general election may lead to voter apathy. And Egyptian security forces say they killed 16 militants during a pair of raids in the north of the Sinai Peninsula. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the postponement of Nigeria's presidential election has thrown the process into chaos as officials look at the costs and logistical challenges and worry about the possibilities of terror attacks. President Buhari has been meeting today with state and national officials about concerns of possible attacks linked to this Saturday's voting. Then there are the complications related to bringing all of the ballot papers back to the Electoral Commission, then sending them back to the polling stations. Estimates say the postponement is costing the country more than $1 billion. My colleague Paul Alexander spoke with VOA staffer Peter Cloti in Lagos about the new challenges.
President Muhammadu Buhari is meeting with governors of Adamawa, Borno, and Kaduna states regarding the security situation in the country. He is also meeting simultaneously at the same meeting with the defense minister, service chiefs, the inspector general of police, and other heads of security agencies there. Basically, people have expressed concern about the possible security challenges in the country or possible violence before, during, and after the elections.
Do you think that there could be a further delay or even a longer-term postponement?
So far, the Electoral Commission has not said there could be a delay. During deliberations to postpone the elections, they had anticipated that it could possibly postpone the elections to that Monday instead of this Saturday 1 week. But they figured out that in order to accomplish what they intended to accomplish in terms of having credible elections, then they needed to have at least 1 week to plan effectively to send all these sensitive materials. These are materials that you will need, including the ballot papers and the ballot boxes, to every one of the 36 states and all polling stations across the country. Now, because of that, because they were not able to hold the elections last week, they retrieved all those ballot papers. Now they have to resend them back to these states for the elections to be conducted on Saturday.
So does this delay favor one candidate or another?
It is not clear if it will favor one party or the other. However, President Muhammad Buhari is coming under intense criticisms following his statement or directive to security operatives in the country, the military and the police, that they should be ruthless against those who are caught trying to snatch ballot boxes by interfering with the electoral process. He said that if anybody engages in that act, then they could stand a chance of losing their lives. The opposition party, the main opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, is not pleased with that statement and has condemned it as a license to kill Nigerians directive from the president. They said this is not a jungle justice. This is a democracy, and that people who are caught flouting the law require due process.
Is there still campaigning going on?
Yes, the Electoral Commission met yesterday to officially declare that the political parties can now go campaign. First, they restricted them, but the two main parties, the ruling APC party and the main opposition PDP, decided that they will violate the ban, because they said the restriction was not rooted in any legal standing. So they decided they will violate the law, they will go on a campaign. But the Electoral Commission met yesterday morning, decided to review the ban, and then said, well, gave the go-ahead to the political parties to go and campaign. But then campaign will officially end on Thursday, 24 hours before the elections on Saturday.
Have there been any estimates of the economic cost of this delay?
Yes, there has been. I spoke with a financial analyst yesterday, and he estimated that Nigeria has been losing $1.5 billion as a result of the postponement. And they said Nigeria could further get a hit on the Naira, possibly in the next few weeks to come.
That was VOA staffer Peter Cloti in Lagos talking with Paul Alexander. Also, there are fears that postponement of Nigeria's general elections may lead to voter apathy on the new date. Some Nigerians traveled to the villages or cities where they registered to vote before last Saturday's planned balloting was postponed for a week. Some analysts believe the delay may discourage some voters from traveling again to vote. Dr. William Wodi is an African Affairs analyst at the University of Port Harcourt. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye about the consequences of the postponement. He says some voters may not be able to afford to travel home again for the elections.
Hello, Kate. The person that is making the news, his name is Dr. Williams Worthy. The pronunciation of the name is Dr. Williams Worthy.
Yes, the postponement will actually inevitably lead to voter apathy, and the reasons are very, very clear. You don't postpone an election 5 hours 15 minutes to 8 o'clock. That was the opening time the polls should have opened. And so to that extent, the general public appears to be sensing some measure of grand conspiracy amongst not just a particular political party, but among the ruling clique in Nigeria to postpone the democratic right of people in Nigerians to choose who their leaders should be after 4 years. So where we are now is that so many Nigerians raise the resources to travel to remote areas, their villages. Some people traveled to where they voted in the last elections. Some people actually did not transfer their voting areas to the current places where they live right now. And so those people had to go back there to vote. And now they are all back again to their station. And in the next couple of days, you ask them to go back again on Saturday precisely to exercise their franchise again. They will ask you, what is in it for us? In the past 4 years, Nigerians have groaned under very, very severe hardships, which the ruling All Progressive Congress government has openly acknowledged and the opposition has stridently pointed out. So where we are now is that I foresee a situation where a disproportionate number of those who were so enthusiastic to vote last Saturday are obviously not going to show up this Saturday.
What can be done to win back the confidence of voters?
You know, the confidence of voters once lost is difficult to win back, and that happens for product promotion. Even when you have a product and once that product has a question mark, there's a problem with it. What do I mean? The confidence of voters have been severely shaken by what has happened. And it has even been worsened by the kind of explanation provided by INEC, the Independent National Electoral Commission of Nigeria. And then, of course, the Minister of State Aviation worsened a very bad case yesterday by saying that the weather, which was the force majeure proposed by INEC, was not an issue, that flights were not interrupted by weather as claimed by INEC. And that is why they didn't distribute material to about 15 states. So what that simply means is that the voters are sensing sabotage, grand sabotage in the conduct of the elections, and that has totally dampened the credibility of INEC, and then of course their enthusiasm to come out to vote on Saturday. So where we are now is that it will take INEC working overtime, doing overdrive to get back the voters to come to the polls to vote.
Apart from INEC, do you also think the political parties and other stakeholders are in the mood for Saturday's election?
For the political parties, yes, they are in the mood for Saturday's election, and the reason is very clear. Nigeria appears to me to be the only country where people have complimentary cards that read profession politics, professional politicians. And so they are going to midnight, anytime they will be awake, they want to do the election. My problem here now, I am apprehensive about the preparedness of INEC to run the elections, because they repeatedly assured and reassured us in the past that they were ready. They reassured us on the eve of the election that they were ready. And so I don't, first, nobody takes them seriously. serious again. Nobody believes what they say. It's this question of seeing is believing right now. And so the political parties are ready because that's the only profession they have in Nigeria. But for INEC, they still know a couple of things we don't know as voters. So my presumption is that INEC may have suffered some kind of operational, organizational, logistic lethargy, and that is going to carry them till Saturday. I wish they had done this postponement for 2 weeks. 1 week should have served for them to rectify all their anomalies. The other week, they set the template for the elections, and they should have also allowed those who were unable to pick up their permanent voters' cards to do so. Now they have foreclosed that, and the political parties are already challenging, to tell you how interested politicians are. They are challenging INEC's rule that nobody should campaign again for the next 1 week. What that simply means is that the politicians are willing, eager, and ready to get on with the job, because that's the only profession they know in Nigeria. But for INEC, what will redeem them is for them to get down, distribute material from Wednesday, and then make sure that everything is in place and guard them properly.
That was Dr. William Wodi, an African affairs analyst at the University of Port Harcourt. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. Egyptian security forces say they killed 16 militants during a pair of raids in the north of the Sinai Peninsula hours after a late-night suicide bombing killed three police officers in near Cairo's famed tourist market. The bombing was unusual as President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has engaged in a security crackdown since taking power in 2013 amid militants' attacks, mostly on security forces and Christians. The attacker was identified as 37-year-old Al-Hassan Abdullah, who has been monitored by police after a bombing Friday near mosque in Cairo injured three people at a checkpoint. The raids in the city of El Arish involved exchanges of gunfire, security forces, and militants. You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Seventeen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. There are fears that the postponement of Nigeria's general elections may lead to voter apathy on the new date. And Egyptian security forces say they killed 16 militants during a pair of raids in the north of the Sinai Peninsula, hours after a late-night suicide bombing killed three police officers in near Cairo's famed tourist market. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Conditions at the Dukwi refugee camp in Botswana are hardly conducive for a student, and most fail to progress beyond secondary school. But a 17-year-old Zimbabwean girl has defied the odds by passing her secondary school leaving examinations with flying colors. From Gaborone, Botswana, reporter Martin Ngwenya has the details.
17-year-old Xolile Ngwenya is one of the nearly 700 Zimbabwean refugees staying at the Dukwi refugee camp outside Botswana's second city of Francistown. Most of the refugees, including Xolile's family, fled during the often violent 2008 presidential election, which left hundreds dead and thousands homeless. The situation at the Dukwi camp has been deteriorating over the past few years after a drop in United Nations funding. However, most of the Zimbabwean refugees have remained at the camp rather than return home. Xolile arrived in Botswana in 2008 and has grown up in the camp. Her mother, Beauty Mlilo, is a single parent who has had to fend for her by doing odd jobs like cleaning houses within the camp.
She is a dedicated girl. While UNHCR used to pay her fees, all other needs, I had to take care of them. Yet I'm not employed. I had to take up these jobs in order to assist her.
Today, Mlilo is a proud mother after her daughter scored an impressive 6 A stars, 3 A's and a B in 9 subjects she set for last November. This means she qualifies to go to university to study a course of her choice. But then there is a dilemma.
The government
Olile has passed, but the government does not sponsor refugee students beyond secondary school. My fear is that if she is to drop out, she might be distracted, as we have seen other girls fall pregnant. My wish is that she finds someone to sponsor her so that she continues with her education.
Olile is happy with the achievements, but the dim prospect of failing to secure sponsorship to further studies blunts her excitement. She does not want to end up like other girls within the camp who are forced to drop out of school, mostly due to unwanted pregnancies.
Against all odds that come with being a refugee, succeeded. But now I only have one challenge of progressing forward to tertiary because I can't find a sponsor. If I could find one, I wish to study actuarial science.
The Dukwi Refugees president, Bengimpilo Weza, says Xolile has done everyone at the camp proud, but there is a concern.
We are so very proud of this young girl who did wonders, who passed her examination. Considering that the fact here in the camp in Dukwi, if kids, they finish Form 5, whether they passed or they failed or what, ever, they don't get that chance, opportunity to further their studies because of scholarships.
While there is gloom over the conditions at the camp, Xolile's achievements provide a rare bright spark. Other refugees hope Xolile's example will inspire more students in the camp. For VOA, this is Martin Ngwenya in Gaborone, Botswana.
African film sector is largely a budding, developing entity, with the notable exceptions of Nigeria's Nollywood and South Africa. Why are African movies much harder to access for Africa's billion-plus population, and how can filmmakers monetize their craft? The answers form the crux of the report by VOA correspondent Adi Gondo on the African film industry.
While African television programs have proliferated via platforms such as MultiChoice Africa, the same cannot be said for the continent's film content, to the extent that viewers are often unaware of theater releases from other African countries. Adze Uga, Nigerian but South Africa-based award-winning television and film producer of popular series such as Zone 14 and Isibaya, speaks on the subject of film distribution.
The reality is the distribution system of having films go to cinemas and then be seen by a mass audience is the best way to basically monetize a film. It's the only way to actually make a film make its money back in the shortest amount of time. Countries like America, India, China all depend on the cinema network for films to actually make a profit. Recently we have the VODs that have come up, you know, the likes of Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, but there's still not a mass market mechanism.
In South Africa, the distribution networks of cinemas formerly owned by Fox were taken over by Steyr Kinoga, an Afrikaans outfit. And due to apartheid policies, they have tended to service a white suburban demographic. Industry players question the logic of serving a small niche.
And suburban South Africa is just, maybe a 3 million man strong market. And that has been the challenge with South African cinema over the decades, that the majority, which are black South Africans, that reside in townships, don't have cinema networks or cinema chains or cinema facilities present in their communities. So they have to basically transport themselves to the suburbs, to the malls, where the cinemas are situated, so where they have to pay premium prices and all sorts of other added costs to be able to enjoy a film. So the challenge has been that, yes, we don't have cinemas that are extensively situated in South African townships. And that has been the major factor that has basically mitigated against the black South African cinema taking off.
Uga and others remain hopeful that the situation will change as pressure mounts due to successful productions such as Matwetwe by South African filmmaker Kagiso Lediga. Matwetwe has been a box office release since its January 25 release and currently sits as number 3 on the charts behind international films Aquaman and Bohemian Rhapsody. Matwetwe is being hailed as an authentic and compelling depiction of South African township hustle. This is a point which Zambian filmmaker Becky Ngoma believes gives African films a competitive advantage.
The biggest opportunity that we have right now as Africa in cinema is Hollywood has run out of stories. The rest of the world is looking at Africa. Black stories are the new gold. The success of Black Panther was an eye-opener, okay? So this is what we have to offer on the table as Africa. We have indigenous stories, okay? There's so many indigenous stories within us that the rest of the world can enjoy. And that is an opportunity. What do we need? Connection to the market, connection to investment. The next thing is networking. Networking is a great opportunity for African filmmakers. Because the more we network, the more we broaden our sphere of understanding our market.
Funding is indeed a challenge, with governments generally slow to recognize the sector's economic potential on the continent. Matwetwe, for example, is based on a 20-year-old script and was co-funded with the help of celebrated music producer and disc jockey Black Coffee, who is a Miami and Ibiza nightclub scene regular. Caro Njoroge, a Kenyan filmmaker, sees a bright future for her country's film sector through collaborative effort.
Last year, we had two international countries. We had the Argentina and we had the Israelis coming on board to be able to just give us an opportunity for co-production. So again, the future is bright in terms of opportunities. There's a thirst for Kenyan stories, or there's a thirst for African stories, as we've seen.
Other opportunities for monetization of the film sector in Africa include online digital platforms such as Netflix, Kwese and Iroko. Still, according to Framing the Shot, a report commissioned by 234 Media, a privately owned entity based in Kenya, creating a sustainable film industry in Africa will require investing in an effective network of brick and mortar cinemas. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily report when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Tuesday on Health Chat, we will discuss measles, as some countries around the world are grappling with the disease. Our guest is Dr. Vincent Sojunu, incident manager with the World Health Organization in Madagascar. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. On the next Stray Dog Africa, we'll discuss the results of the February 16th Nigerian presidential and National Assembly elections. What concerns and issues swayed the voters the most? An in-depth discussion on the Nigerian elections on the next Stray Dog Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa. Stand up!